Hi there, and welcome back to another episode of the Super Mercado Brothers Video Game Music Podcast.
Thanks so much for joining us, guys, in this very exciting episode. Once again, this is the podcast where we share and discuss the very best in video game music. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann. Today on the podcast, it's time again for Original Showcase. This is the sixth time doing it, and once again, we're joined by our brother, Marty.
What's up, Marty?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. We wouldn't have an Original Showcase without you. I think this is going to be a tradition. We got to keep going. We had Marty last time for Original Showcase 5, and it was such a blast. We were able to show not only Will's and my music, but also some of Marty's music as well, so we're going to keep that going today. As you guys know, maybe if you're new to the podcast, you might not know this. Every season, we do an episode called Original Showcase, where we play music that we've composed, kind of check in with you guys, see what we've been up to in the world of music, because as you guys may know, we're composers as well as podcasters, so that's kind of a facet of us that we like to share once a season.
Yeah, and we have some pretty exciting announcements and just kind of things to share with you today. For the first time, Carl and I are going to share a track that we wrote from a new game that we're working on that we're really excited about. We think you guys are going to enjoy that. And we're going to introduce and play some tracks from an upcoming project that all three of us are working on. So definitely stay tuned for the entire episode, because we are kind of saving the best for last.
Absolutely. That's going to be really fun. So we got so much good music to get to today. Let's just get into it. So what you guys heard playing in with, that was a track by Will from his album Dear Mario. That was Plain Old Plains, the first map theme on that album. That's the Grassland map theme. So Will, before we move on, is there anything quickly you wanted to say about that track?
Yeah, I think the only thing I'd say is that I was obviously very inspired by all the wonderful map themes from, you know, Super Mario 3 and Super Mario World, and I wanted to make something really short and simple that could be catchy. It ended up being, I think, one of the most satisfying pieces to make in the album, even though it's very seemingly simple. It's very special to me.
It really captures Mario, even though I can't point to a specific sort of reference.
Yeah, I think that's why I like it, because it just kind of came to me, and
catchy,
it wasn't
it's
really
simple,
like,
it's
yeah,
fun,
it wasn't
yeah.
based off of anything.
Yeah, that's really cool. So guys, we're going to play tracks that were, most of these are going to be solo tracks that just Will composed for, you know, some various album or project of his, something that I composed. We're going to do some Marty, and we're also going to do a few kind of collaborative Super Mercado Bros tracks. So let's now move on to a track of mine. This is from my most recent solo album called Another Day in Dreamland. And that was a Kirby tribute album that I made with SNES samples. Came out, I believe, in this past October. Had a really good time with this. I'm going to play a track called Cloudy Heights. This is one of the kind of slower, more groovy, jazzier tracks on the album. It's one of my favorites. So let's take a listen to Cloudy Heights from Another Day in Dreamland. This is Cloudy Heights, and this is from my recent album, Another Day in Dreamland, the Kirby tribute album. Yeah, this one was, I believe, the second track that I wrote, and yeah, I think it's probably one of my favorites from the album.
Yeah, this is so good. It's just hypnotizing.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, I don't know. The groove is so appealing and infectious, and I just love this, that just like simple main melody, and then just all the wonderful colors and the orchestrations.
Totally. And what I really like about this album is, since it's mostly being inspired by just that one Kirby game,
Dreamland 3.
Yeah, you get to hear kind of a lot of nice, you know, this is like the counterpart to a song that like exists in that game. And what I love about it is I feel like, just to be a little technical, the samples that you ripped, it was all done very very cleanly, and the kind of way that you reassembled it, again, I don't know, it feels so pristine and accurate. It really sounds like the Super Nintendo, and it could just like sit alongside all that other Kirby music. And honestly, I think you could fool someone. Like you could put these in that game, and some people probably like that don't pay a lot of attention to the music wouldn't know, because it's satisfying the same kind of emotional needs that series kind of demands.
That's really cool to hear.
Also, special shout out to that that trombone counterline. It's just so cool.
That was also inspired by a specific track. I think my personal favorite sample of this game is the pan flute.
Yeah,
the thing that's going through. That's just so classic to me. That sample. I was so glad to be able to use it.
My favorite is the.
Yeah, the little short bell with the delay on it.
I love that. Oh, it has so this fun. Little like twist to it.
Absolutely. Really so cool. Good. That was fun. Well, now we're going to move on to a track that Will
composed.
Oh,
yeah. This is... So this is going to be the second track if I ever get around to making another kind of piano instrumental album. This one is a little bit, I think this next album, if I do it, it's going to be a lot more kind of fun and lighthearted.
Right.
It might have some ragtime stuff and things of that nature. This is a very kind of plucky, bouncy theme. I was kind of thinking of almost like a TV show theme song kind of quality to the melody. And it's all done up with pizzicato strings, so it's sort of like a string orchestra, and
all
there's
pits,
some piano in there
really
too.
Cool. So let's take a listen to Ripples on the Water, composed by Will.
This is Ripples on the Water, and this is a little track that I made up, instrumental, kind of sparse.
Yeah, you know what's
strings.
Funny, so beautiful, though? This is a great track, but we just did that Simulations episode last week. This kind of reminds me of some music from The Sims, because it's really pleasing and relaxing, beautiful, but kind of borders on a little bit of the public domain kind of quality, that really kind of old orchestral music that's just very good background music that you hear in ads or TV shows.
Yeah, I just wanted something really kind of feel-good and satisfying, and also kind of trying to explore using pizzicato strings as if they're all like one instrument.
Well, yeah, and those pit samples sound so good. I really think that's always been the strength of sample libraries, is the pits. They sound so real
because they're so short that they could devote the
well, and also
I
was really excited. This is around the time when I had just gotten my Quantum Leap pianos library, which I absolutely adore, and so I kind of wanted to feature some piano in like a really sparse and subtle way. And I
those pianos are beautiful.
Yeah, just luscious sound. Yeah,
that's really awesome. Dude, that's really cool. So now this is exciting. We're going to play a track from Fireflower. I'm sure you guys, if you're a fan of the podcast, you knew that this past summer we performed an original musical at the Fringe Festival that Marty wrote, and all the music he wrote as well, and Will kind of helped him out with some of the sequencing on Famitracker. This was an 8-bit musical, and it was just such a good time, and we recently posted the video on YouTube.
Yeah, Marty, do you want to talk a little bit about Fireflower?
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, it was a real labor of love that we were all involved in, as Carl said, this summer for the Minnesota Fringe Festival. And for any fans of the podcast, you know, I really think it's a show that you would enjoy, because it's essentially a retelling of a Super Mario Brothers like story, but in the spirit of an old classic musical or an old movie like The Wizard of Oz. And this song here is actually a song that the villain sings. You know, we tend to think of the hero songs in musicals as being I want song. Mm-hmm. And this is really a sort of song that reveals sort of a who I am sort of a song.
Of the villain. And the villain, by the way, is played by Will. So this track features Will on vocals. This song is called Enough, composed by Marty Brueggemann from Fireflower. Let's take a listen to this.
Enough, enough, she'll die before conceding. Retreat, retreat, and pace the halls alone again. Firelight, lie awake in the dead of night. Shadows fall and fly away. On my own, I'm a ghost, descending down the stairs to find you, slipping through my fingers, overgrown, overdosed, a specter in the walls behind you. No one ever must I always be so cold and strange and strong? Enough, enough, enough.
That was beautiful. Bang up job, Will, on the singing. That was Enough.
Yeah, beautiful singing.
Performed by Will, composed by Marty Brueggemann from Fireflower, the original 8-bit musical comedy. Man, that really kind of makes me nostalgic. You know, I had such a great time this summer.
Nostalgic for months ago?
Nostalgic for this summer, yeah. I just kind of wish we could do it all over again. It was such a blast. And Will, you know, I was always just so... And it was cool to see the audience reaction when you sung the song, because this was a moment where, like, musically, it's just like, wow, like, this guy has got pipes. It's just,
well, it's
just
sort
a cool
of a
moment.
Reveal of kind of the inside of this character who you assume is pretty vile and mean.
Yeah, it's really... I remember Marty and I, because Marty and I started working on this, like, a long time ago. Marty had already started the script, and we wanted to get, like, a head start on tracking and stuff.
Right.
So I remember when Marty was just first starting to write this villain character, and he wanted me to play it. I remember you talked about some of the influences for it being like the Beast character from Beauty and the Beast and
the
Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
So I remember kind of
cool.
listening to performances of that to kind of channel.
Yeah, so definitely I invite anyone to actually watch the show if you're interested. You can actually watch the complete performance. And the YouTube link is on the Marcato
site.
And
for fans of video game music, I think you should really appreciate like the underscore. I mean, it's a pretty cool achievement to have it all done in 8-bit. But even if you notice on this track, we use some FDS,
which would only be used on the Famicom
disk system. So
yeah, this is actually the first piece in the show where the FDS is introduced. And mm-hmm. then once it's in the underscore, it kind of continues
to play a role.
Yeah, it's sort of like the emotional undercurrent. Like I feel like the times we use it are always for those kind of lyrical moments.
Well, that FDS lead is so gorgeous, but it's cool hearing it used in like a background context, you know? Like it's not...
Right.
Obviously, you're singing, that's the lead melody, but what's cool is that FDS instrument is almost like... it kind of reminds me of like a violin with like really nice vibrato that would be like accompanying a singer.
Right, yeah.
It's kind of that.
Well, this was my first foray into using FDS mm-hmm. like sequencing it, so that moment when like the chorus melody comes in and getting to sequence that was probably some of the most satisfying
also
work I had
really,
on the whole project.
Also a really quick shout out, the timpani sample that you hear in the beginning of that is actually a brand new Nintendo timpani sample that Will made.
Yeah, that's another really fun thing on this project, learning how to make my own DPCM.
Samples. Yeah.
There's one track actually where I made a harp sample, mm-hmm. and so we actually used that to have an added pitched note.
That's so cool.
In the track. So
I love that.
Yeah, listen out for that stuff, guys, if you check out Fireflower.
That was a blast. Well, now we're going to move on to a track of mine. This is from an album. Oh, man, I think this was a couple years ago. It was called Deep Water, and it was an EP of mine that consisted of some kind of chill, laid-back music. This one has a little bit more energy to it. This is a track called Off the Ground.
Dude, you know, there's the one track from Deep Water I just almost never get out of my head, and it's the doon, 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 doon.
Oh, yeah. I think a moment too late. I think I played that last original showcase.
I love that one.
Yeah, that was... Totally. There's two tracks that feature my good friend Elliot Keys on bass. This is one of the tracks that features him. It starts off with kind of a drum and bass kind of techno groove, and then eventually there's this bridge section that kind of comes down in energy, and Elliot is featured on that section. So this is Off the Ground from my album Deep Water. Hope you guys enjoy this. Here we go. You guys are listening to Off the Ground. This is the second track from Deep Water. This one features Elliot Keys on the bass.
Man, that's so good. Oof.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, I really kind of wanted to just have like this kind of bridge section that just completely took you in a different direction. And I kind of thought about that when I started this track. I always had the intention of I want to have like a completely different bridge that features Elliot. So it's kind of cool. Like I had that idea, but I didn't have any music. Like I didn't know exactly how I was going to do that. And then it comes back to this section. I had a really good time with this album.
Yeah, I love the energy of the opening of the... you know, the very beginning, the drum and bass idea.
Well, this isn't the last time on today's episode we're going to hear Elliot's bass playing.
Absolutely.
One of the cool things later, I don't want to give any spoilers, but mm-hmm. Carl's Funk Band, their new album's coming out soon, so...
Yeah, there's a couple tracks today that we're going to be sharing that are kind of from our other projects other than video game music. So we kind of wanted to show, you know, a little bit more of a diversity of what we do musically, you know, so that's going to be fun to share some of that stuff. So now we're going to move on to a track from Will's album, Child of the Chozo.
Ooh, yay. I'm excited about this because this is really, I mean, we played, I think, one track from, or maybe two, but that was
two,
before
yeah.
the album got released. Yeah, so Child of the Chozo was a Metroid tribute album that I completed in September. This was probably the most ambitious musical project I've ever done. The album was over 20 tracks, and it kind of spanned the entire Metroid series as far as influences, and it was broken into three different parts. An 8-bit part, which sounded like NES, a 16-bit part sounded like Super Nintendo, and then the last chunk of it was going for Metroid Prime sound. And so it was really, I think above all else, it was a really great experience for me to kind of push myself musically and as far as my skills sort of as an engineer and with production, because that's an area where I think I've kind of had less experience, obviously,
yeah.
than you guys. So
well,
this album
the first
really
track
pushed me.
I believe you're going to share from that album. This is Dead in the Water. This is from the SNES era.
Yeah, this is
Metroid.
My favorite of the 16-bit tracks. I don't know, this for some reason I feel like this one just kind of captures the spirit of Super Metroid.
Very atmospheric. Let's take a listen to Dead in the Water. awesome. You guys are listening to Dead in the Water, composed by Will Brueggemann from Child of the Chozo. This was his recent Metroid tribute album. This one might be the most atmospheric track on the entire album. That includes the Prime stuff. It's really impressive using these kind of primitive samples, the way that you use dynamics and panning and swell. And it's the same way that those brilliant composers did it in Super Metroid. So yeah, this one's very impressive.
Carl, I think you made a mistake. This is actually a Kenji Yamamoto song, right? Isn't this some sort of unreleased?
No. It's Monaco Hamano, actually. No. This actually is a new piece of music released in 2014. Pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, here. I actually do think the track that this is most inspired by is a Monaco Hamano.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's something in recent years that Will and me and like I feel like maybe a lot of us on this podcast have kind of grown to appreciate
specific credit
her contributions to this
right.
series, because
oh
in the
gosh.
Past I always just assumed it was mostly Kenji Yamamoto. Maybe she did like a couple tracks.
I think
tracks.
A lot of the 16-bit era stuff, I was also very influenced by Metroid Fusion, like some
which
of the music
she
that
was
I played
kind of the main
and studied
composer.
The most was a lot of Metroid
yeah,
Fusion
yeah she
stuff.
Just oh my gosh, she had such a big influence on this series.
But I was just really happy like when I figured out kind of the riff element that mm-hmm. boom, 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 and then when that melody kind of da 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 da, I don't know, it just kind of all fit together in a way where I didn't feel like I was having to really exert a lot of effort to try to sound like Metroid.
Yeah, there are a couple tracks that I can think of in this era where I can't imagine this not on SNES samples. Like, this is the definitive version of the song. If you did
right.
this with better instruments, it just, I think you would actually
yeah,
lose something.
Yeah, and I
something.
Think this Child of the Chozo was the first time I kind of had that experience, because
right.
with some of the Mario stuff and other video game stuff, it's like when you read it on the piano and you have a really good melody.
Mm-hmm. If you start
it's almost a sacrifice bringing it down to 8-bit or 16-bit.
Yeah, well this is fun. I kind of like the order of the playlist here. I'm going to play now a track of mine, another SNES track, but it couldn't be more different. We're having these two SNES back-to-back. This is another track from Another Day in Dreamland. This is Frozen Summit 2. This is probably my favorite track that I did on the album. I remember this was one of the last ones I composed, and I really went above and beyond. I really wanted to push myself because not that I wasn't happy with what I had done so far, but I really wanted one that just kind of the arrangement and all of the parts was just 100% authentic to the style of Johnny Ishikawa. So that's what I tried to do for this track. This is Frozen Summit 2. You guys are listening to Frozen Summit 2 from Another Day in Dreamland. Brr.
Dude, that's so, you really should teach a class on Super Nintendo arranging.
Oh, just, thanks,
Ben. It's so beautiful hearing all those different sounds and how they interact with each other.
Awesome.
And, yeah, wow.
Yeah,
I really
it was,
like
I gotta
the melody
say,
of this one.
Oh, thanks, dude. Yeah, no, I gotta say it was so fun to kind of dissect his work on the SNES and listening to the individual channels and hearing how he kind of did really interesting things and inventive things to make it feel so lush when really there's only about 5, maybe sometimes 6 channels going on at once. And right. it was really kind of fun to try to have that challenge.
That is an interesting thing about the Super Nintendo when you go and actually start to look at the individual channels. Yeah, there are a lot fewer tracks than
oftentimes
you might,
they don't
you
use
assume.
Every channel. Mm-hmm. And then some of them are obviously dedicated to percussion. So as far
yeah.
as pitch voices, I mean, and I feel like the Super Nintendo is where you start getting a lot of the jazziness.
Oh yeah, because you can do that with lusher
series.
Chords, more
but it's like
chords.
Even still, they still have to be kind of economical. With
well,
it.
One thing that I thought was interesting, just one example of that ingenuity, is on drum samples. For example, you'd think there maybe would be multiple tracks, but sometimes there's not. Like if you have a snare, for example, a lot of the snare samples are incredibly short. So what they'll do is they'll have one snare sample, and then they'll repeat that sample at a really low volume right after it. So it sounds like delay or reverb, but it's actually just two strikes of the sample at different volumes every time the sample is hit.
Right.
It's things like that that are so brilliant.
Well, and also it goes back to that kind of linear drum playing concept that you talked about before, where you never have, you know, a kick and a snare, a kick and a hi-hat at the same time. Mm-hmm. For any drum to sound, it needs to be in place.
Yeah, and guess what kind of music that's perfect for? Jazz and funk. You know, it's just... Maybe that's
absolutely
not why, but that's one of the advantages of that, you know, that limitation.
There's such a natural fit. Yeah.
Really cool stuff. Well, now we're going to move on to another track from Child of the Chosa. Well, this is a Metroid Prime inspired track.
Yeah, so this was towards the last of the project. I had already finished all the 8 and 16-bit stuff. I kind of wanted to go chronologically so that I was, you know, I was in a Hirokazu Tanaka kind of headspace, and then I was in a Kenji headspace. Some of that overlapped, but the Prime stuff was all done last.
Right.
And so I was already kind of exhausted and kind of like, oh, what have I gotten myself into? And now I have to do the hardest bulk of work.
And I was waiting more for this than anything. Like, I remember, like, I was nagging you the whole project, like, when are you going to do the Prime stuff?
So what happened I really needed to make sure before I did any Prime stuff that I could have
all the instruments.
Every instrument that I would want.
Well, and it was unlike any sort of music you've ever composed before.
Yeah, exactly. So I went on kind of a hunt finding all these different synthesizers, and
luckily
I tried
found
to
everything you needed.
I went through the entire Reason sound bank for weird kind of percussion and weird ambient noises. I made my own stuff. I ripped from the games when possible for certain hits, but there was not a lot that could be salvaged. So anyways, this was when I finally figured out how to get that right kind of sine wave setting, and
sci-fi
with combinations of different keyboard sounds. And
I think Carl and
patches.
I are just so giddy, we just can't wait to listen to it.
This
again.
Is a hero in a new dimension.
And the last thing I'd like to say, one thing about the project is the title melody exists in four variations, an 8-bit, a 16-bit. This is the Prime variation. And at the end, there's sort of a montage orchestral thing that plays.
So here's a hero in a new dimension. Gosh, this is a hero.
Jaws on the floor
over
here.
Yeah, I'll never forget the moment when Will first showed this to me. I came in, he was kind of working on it in my room, and I came back in and put the headphones on, and my jaw was literally dropped. This is such a fun moment.
I figured out how to do the sine wave. The crazy thing is the plug-in was a... What was it? It was some
was
like
a Korg.
Yeah, it was. No, it
wave
wasn't
station?
A Korg. It was its own Moog synthesizer.
Oh, okay.
And it was an exact replica, kind of like, you know, on Reason you can make it look like the back where you deal with this, which is, well, that's all this was. It was an exact like digital replica. So I had to look on about how to wire
how
a Moog synthesizer
those,
to get like the right kind of sine wave and have the portamento and the effects that I needed. And it was really late. It was probably like 1 a.m. when I finally figured it out, and I had like the melody written, and I just played it, and I put on some reverb, and I was just like, so excited to the next day, you know, really start working on this track.
Something that was so neat about this project is really the scope and the ambition of it. You know, you had a way in to compose the 8-bit music, and you had maybe a little bit of experience with this, with the 16-bit, but before you knew it, you had to work on this, and it was completely new territory. And I know for Carl and I, we're sort of wondering, first of all, can anyone do it? Can it be done? Mm-hmm. And how are you going to go about?
And I think that the prime stuff is the best on the album.
Yeah,
I really think
it really is what I'm most satisfied
with. It's just, yeah, it's really good. So guys, we're really excited now. We're going to unveil a track from a game that Will and I are currently working on. This is something we are so excited about. This is a 16-bit platform game. It kind of has some kind of Norse Viking kind of influence.
Yeah,
to
we're
the
not
design
allowed
of the
to
game.
Give you too much of like the story and the details about it, but yeah, basically think of like God of War type world, but on like
on the Genesis.
On the
or
Genesis,
something.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it has to be groovy. We tried to implement a little bit of kind of Viking influence and rock influence, but make it feel at home in the Genesis. Kind of have a lot of different influences coming together.
Yeah, I'd say there's like a Matt Furness, Jake Kaufman, Manami Matsume influence.
Absolutely. So this is Hades Underworld. This is going to be the first stage theme in the game by the Super Mario Brothers. Let's take a listen. Oh man, we had such a blast working on this game. We're still working on this. Is Hades Underworld from an upcoming 16-bit
this
style?
This is gonna be the first level
from us.
Congratulations, guys!
Thank you.
Such a great song. It really feels like a classic video game gem. But I love the kind of combination of the older and sort of the newer elements.
Yeah, and that's something that the designer of the game kind of specifically said that he wanted, and we kind of collaborated with him on some ideas to kind of bring some of his initial ideas to life. Such a great relationship we already have with this guy. We're really excited. He's very professional. He trusts us. He's able to just let us do our thing, and it's just been such a fun time
so far.
It's
almost like we've had to work through some more kind of tricky relationships with different developers in order to get to a point where we can just have a really satisfying kind of experience.
So yeah, we finished like I think 6 tracks for the demo of this game. So hopefully sometime soon we'll be able to kind of show you guys some sort of demo of this game. And then, you know, eventually we're going to be finishing the entire soundtrack. But yeah, no, this one was another kind of the way we're approaching the collaboration on this project is I would start off with chords and groove and bassline and that kind of stuff. And Will would write the melody on top of it. And it's a really cool kind of thing where we're kind of meeting in the middle where it doesn't
really
cool, feel
like
either
of us. Yeah, it's cool because like the parts are, the responsibilities are unequal, but also it balances itself out because it's like... Yep. You know, you're doing more things, chords, bass, stuff, groove, that's like more work, yet the melody is one of the most important things. So it's cool where it's like it balances itself out nicely, I think. And it's an easy way of collaborating, I think, for you and I.
And that was a method that you guys had done before.
Yeah, with Soaring Through the Stars. Yeah, we did that same
thing.
Yeah,
this track we made on Thanksgiving after we
almost finished it, the entire track, just on Thanksgiving. You know, in between dinner and hanging out with family, we would just be in another room working on it on that day.
And some of the other tracks for this project, weren't you guys working via Skype?
Yes.
Composing together?
Most of it.
Yeah, a lot of it, like FaceTime, I'd be in Duluth, Carl would be here in the Twin Cities.
And so would you say that the FaceTime compositions are a little more smooth than the Skype compositions, or is it more of a Google Hangout?
I feel like we mostly
what
FaceTimed.
Are sort of the compositional
I don't know, I think the AIM are really, the compositions are the best.
Definitely, yeah, AIM emoticons.
Absolutely. Yeah. He would just tell me C, D, G, and I'd be like, oh, sounds great.
If it didn't sound good, I would use the little poop smiley curl.
Well, now this is cool. We're going to play the first, for all three of us, we're going to play one track today, non-video game music, to kind of show you some other things that we're up to musically. So this is a track that Marty composed. This is called What Danger? So do you want to talk a little bit about this,
Marty? This is one of my absolute favorites.
Yeah, this is actually, it wasn't written for a specific assignment, but it was just sort of an exploration of kind of stepping into like a modern sort of film score sensibility, but just trying to discover something that, you know, really felt sort of classic and, and timeless.
Really kind of a nice
me.
Exploratory composition for you. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Really fun. So let's take a listen to What Danger by Marty. This is What Danger, an orchestral piece composed by Marty. Some really nice kind of modern film score influence in here. But it's so melodic. There's parts of it that really do remind me of video game music, something like Gravity Rush. You know, what's cool about Kohei Tanaka and that score is he's a film composer that is all of a sudden being thrust into the video game world and having to do something a little bit more kind of fun and melodic. So that's kind of what I get from this piece, even though that maybe wasn't the intention behind it. I think it's just because you have such a melodic style. Those kind of two worlds coming together is something that is so enjoyable to listen to.
I think this is my favorite piece of music that you've ever written, Marty. I love this much. Like when you first wrote this, I think you sent me like the first like 45 seconds and I would just listen to it and then listen again.
My favorite part is the dun, 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 the really kind of dark, low brass, kind of Zimmer-esque.
Yeah, I remember I would play that part on the piano all the time.
Sounds like
it's
Batman.
So gorgeous.
That part. It just really feels like it could be a Batman theme.
Oh, I could definitely see that.
I think it's much more melodic.
I think the influence of all the great video game composers, I mean, that's a really huge part of my life. And, you know, when I think a lot of the classic composers in video games, there's just such an economy of notes and such sort of like an immediacy in so many of the melodies. A lot of times they really almost have to operate like these jingles and they have a very limited space to kind of display what they are. And, so, yeah, I think all those things are kind of rattling around in my head.
I think in this example, you kind of were able to incorporate a beautiful melodic sensibility with sort of the modern trends in film music, which is a lot of kind of minimalism and repeated ostinatos and things like that. And that melody is so simple, and it's just that kind of quarter note melody, but it's so gorgeous.
Well, thank you. Thanks.
Well, let's move on. We still got a lot of great music to get to. So now we're going to play a track. This is a track from my most recent Sonic Ask. This is Sonic Ask Volume 4, which came out, I believe, in May of 2014. We're going to play, I think I played a couple tracks on our last original showcase, but I'm going to play one more from this album. This is Cursed Caverns. This is a fun track for me. I kind of wanted a combination of the Mystic Cave 1 player and Mystic Cave 2 player. If you remember, the 2 player Mystic Cave zone is a lot more kind of a little bit happier and kind of groovy, has that really kind of classic wow wow kind of bass instrument. But obviously the Mystic Zone 1 players kind of has that theremin. It's more haunted. So kind of the combination of those.
It's like a 1.5 player.
Yeah, and also with kind of the MJ influence of Sonic 3.
I really love this track. I remember the first time I listened to it, I may have cut class in school to go listen to this
track. Oh, cool, dude.
Oh, it's so good.
Cool. This is Cursed Caverns. Here we go. For listening to Cursed Caverns from Sonic Esque Volume 4 is the track of mine.
I love all of your instruments that come from the MO8 that aren't like FM ones, that are just kind of like, to me, they're Sonic-esque instruments, and I like that you go back to them. It establishes its own kind of sound. It's some of my favorite stuff. I mean, that theremin instrument, and then that
sync leads. Yeah, thanks, Will. So the MO8 is, for anyone who doesn't know, that's the keyboard that I own, that when I made my first Sonic-esque, it was actually mostly those keyboard instruments, and then now it's kind of mostly the FM, but I kind of always like to go back to those sometimes.
Yeah. Not only is this such a great gift to Sonic fans who, you know, I assume almost all love the Mystic Cave theme, but it's just a great piece of music. When that when that A melody comes in, it's just really striking. And I remember, here it is right now. I remember the first time that I heard it, that last chord just took me by surprise in a really big way. But it's the sort of thing where every time it comes around, like, the surprise wears off, and I'm just like, it's just pure joy.
Oh,
and just
cool.
Like,
it really captures the spirit of kind of Mystic Cave, almost better than your first attempt in Sonic Esque 1, even though that one is more kind of like, I feel, following the template.
Right.
This has that kind of mischievous spirit a little bit, and even though, like, groove-wise and rhythmically it's doing different stuff, it has that same fun, gnarly sense to it. My favorite is just the bass.
Well,
the
this part was very Thriller inspired because I wanted to have one repeated bass line with chords changing on top of it.
One of my favorite, I like that, and I also love when the bass just starts hitting that same note. Down, 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 down. Oh, it's so satisfying.
Thanks a lot, guys. Yeah, so that one was really fun to do. So now we're going to move on to, oh gosh, I love this. This is, oh my gosh, I think this might be the best track in Child of Chozo. This is the basically the last Prime track before he does his kind of orchestral reprise of some of the main themes on the album. This is the Fate of the Universe, what would be kind of a final boss theme in the Metroid Prime universe.
Right.
From Child of the Chozo. Here we go. We'll be right back. Oh my goodness, badass. This is The Fate of the Universe. I think Emily played this on our interview with Top Score. This is a boss theme in the era of Metroid Prime. And oh my gosh, does Will ever nail this?
I mean, this is the fate of the universe in this battle.
And boss theme, you're just describing like the quality of the
quality.
Theme. It's just boss.
Yeah, no, it's a boss theme. No, the bass instrument, those all the different ambient
drums.
Yeah,
this is another thing I was kind of dreading this one because I'm like, I just have to make this, like, I have to capture everything about Metroid. So I needed that bass. I needed the...
I think me and Martin's favorite thing is the techno kind of brass that have the slight pitch bend on every single chord.
That was this Korg,
really haunting
synth plugin that has all these different instruments that I used a lot for the Prime stuff. It had some of the more ambient effects, and it also had some of those stab saw leads
that you hear so much in dance music.
And I was also kind of studying some of the Prime boss music. There's just a lot of kind of like arpeggiation of diminished chords and just like melodies moving across fully diminished sevens and stuff like that.
For me, one of the great takeaways of the project, Will, was that there was a clearly defined, you know, style to a lot of the Metroid music.
Right.
I wasn't really so sure when you started it that you'd really be able to kind of tap in and capture, because I guess I thought that each piece was maybe a little bit more individual.
Right.
And I didn't know that they necessarily added up to sort of an identifiable musical style or language.
And I think that's kind of also why
totally
I wanted to do
that,
because... Also, I feel like even I didn't appreciate Metroid music enough. I loved the game so much, but the scores were so ambient that sometimes I just took it for granted. But it wasn't until I started realizing, wait, these are both ambient and melodic and memorable and really effective.
And so they're communicating something specific.
And it
too.
Also scared me because it was the kind of thing where it's like, I don't think I could do this. You know, I don't think I have the skills in my tool belt to make music like that. So it kind of was like a challenge to see. It was like, how can I?
Well, that's something I think for any creative person, if you can ever put yourself into a situation where you actually don't really know if you have the means to achieve it or to get out of it, I mean, it may be hard on your health, but I couldn't recommend it enough. It's just one of the most sort of exciting,
forces you to just do it, just get the work done.
Yeah, one of the most exciting things that you can involve yourself
in. And just
in.
To kind of celebrate learning by creating is also really kind of fun.
Absolutely. Well, guys, I'm excited to play a track of mine, a non-video game track. This is from my funk band, Carl B and the Soul Surgeons. Our upcoming album, it's called Electrosurgery, and it comes out next month. It comes out in February. So I'm going to play one track for you guys in case you're curious. This is Take a Bath, a track that I composed.
And once again, we have Elliot Keys on bass.
Yep. So this is myself on drums. We have Andrew McManaman on guitar. Elliot
the McManimal,
Keys on,
as they call him.
Yeah. Elliot Keys on bass and Frank Merkelowitz on keys. This is Take a Bath from Electrosurgery. Here we go.
Thank you.
You guys are listening to Take a Bath by Carl B and the Soul Surgeons from our upcoming album Electrosurgery.
Dude, that's so enjoyable. Just great playing all around, and just, I don't know, love the groove.
Thanks, dude.
It sounds like it was engineered and mixed really well.
Dude. Yeah, this was recorded, shout out to Adam Tucker. He has a recording studio called Signature Tone Recording Studio, and that's where we record this one. Yeah, it was such a fun weekend. We have three of the tracks that we filmed. So actually right now, if you go on YouTube, I think on the post on our blog of this episode, you guys can find a YouTube link to this video, Take a Bath. Yeah.
So Carl, how did the writing of this song come together?
It was fun. This one, I started off, I think I was driving to a practice, and in my car, as I do for a lot of these tracks, I just kind of started coming up with a riff or a groove, just, you know, singing it, and then I remember just recording my mouth with my iPhone of that bonk, boom, boom.
So like the bass line,
the basic groove. The basic riff, right? And then I knew I wanted the head to just be really dirty and just a lot of grit to it. And so that's, I think I wrote that on my mini keyboard. But I still wanted Elliot to do while Andy's playing that. And then the rest of it just kind of came together. And this bridge was kind of a little bit more kind of jamming with the band and stuff.
Sure thing. And then the solos also are just terrific.
Yeah, and if you're in the Twin Cities area, like, you definitely got to come see these guys live, because they play one hell of a show.
Thanks a lot, dude. Well, cool. Well, now we're going to play Will's track, kind of from another world other than video games. This is really beautiful. This is a choral piece that Will composed, and this is actually performed all himself, but you would never guess it. It sounds like a full choir, but this is all Will, you know, multi-tracking his voice. You want to talk about this
one? A male chorus piece.
What's it called?
It's called Angele Dei. That's a Latin name that means angel of God.
Okay.
And I used a really old Latin prayer from, I think, the 15 or 1600s.
Cool.
And it was this kind of piece where the goal of it for me was kind of to start off in almost like a Renaissance era sound, harmonically, and just as far as the part writing, and kind of advance it through. So by the end, it almost sounds kind of like with the benefit of 20th century harmony.
Absolutely,
and stuff.
Yeah. Well, let's take a listen to Angele Dei, composed by Will. You're listening to Angele Dei, composed by Will Brueggemann and performed by Will.
So, Will, what sort of cathedral or basilica did you record this in?
I actually did this all in from my dorm room.
Oh, my gosh.
But I did not double tracking, but sometimes up to 10 parts per voice. Usually, it's only like 3 or 4.
Typical college dorm behavior.
Well, yeah.
I mean, what
funny.
College freshman doesn't record?
Well, that's
a choral
the benefit
piece in their
of this.
And it's always in Latin.
It's always gorgeous and beautiful. How original here!
No, but like that's the benefit of these mics, these SM7s that we record in. They really don't pick up a lot of the sound of the room, and you're able to kind of do those crazy, just like
you can
keep
always
tracking
add more wetness and add more reverb, but you can't take it away.
Exactly. Yeah, and so It's funny, when I first moved into the dorm, you know, I was kind of self-conscious about, you know, doing music, sure, and being heard. But after a while, this was pretty late. This was probably only like a month or so ago that I did this. And so I was just kind of like, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to sing loudly and not really care what happens.
It's just such a gorgeous piece of music. I mean, it's
so authentic.
Words sort of fail, but I think if you were just listening
again,
and experiencing that.
This was composed in 2014. I mean, I think that's amazing. Because when you're listening to it, it just sounds like an old classic kind of.
Well, yeah, it definitely starts kind of medieval Renaissance-y. But, you know, by the end, it's almost like evoking some jazz harmony in a sense with all the kind
of parallel.
It's a great
combination, yeah. Mm-hmm. I love it. Thanks. Old and new together. So now this is fun. I knew that for some reason on this episode, I wanted to kind of go back and play a track of mine that I wrote a long time ago. I just thought you guys might get a kick out of it. I just think it could maybe lead to an interesting discussion. I remember when I was in high school, I had this kind of, you know, crappy high school band, and that was most of the music I was writing. But in addition to that, I remember just really kind of spending a lot of weekends just messing around on my keyboard and recording instrumental music, and I didn't know why I was doing it, but now looking back to it, I was making video game music for the first time.
Sure.
So I wanted to play one of those early pieces of video game music that I wrote. You know, it's a little
bit... Was this like your senior year of high school?
Senior year of high school. This is 2006 that I wrote this. And obviously, you know, I think I've grown a lot since then, but I still kind of like this piece. This is The Final Zone, composed by me from 2006. So let's take a listen to this. Are listening to The Final Zone. This track was written bordering on 9 years ago by myself. I think I put it on a little album that I just made called Destiny Awaits.
You made a crap ton of those video
and now
games.
Destiny's
I
here. It was awaiting.
I don't know why I did that. It was just, I don't know. I think that was the origins of realizing that I just like to compose video game music.
You've always been interested in like compiling things into albums.
Yeah.
You're not someone who just like makes something. You like to make albums. You like the structure of
it. I'm an album guy.
That's honestly might be the reason why we do.
That
might be the reason why we do kind of our Super Mercado Brothers albums and stuff.
Because what's funny is these albums, no one has ever heard but me and I think Will and Marty. Like, I've never shared those. I don't know. Maybe one day for fun, I'll share some of this stuff. But some of it I still like. Like, I still like this track. I still think it's cool.
I like
love
the
meter.
It's really cool.
Appealing. Yeah.
Yeah. And that piano group, it's just really, again, you had such a good head on your shoulders when it came to rhythm and groove and stuff like that.
What happened to that head? It was on your shoulders. I don't.
Yeah,
this is pretty good. This was all done with our old
Yamaha. Absolutely.
Keyboard. Did you play that really fast?
Yeah.
That consistently
the whole
time? Or did you just do it once and then loop it?
I may
it?
Have copied it. I did it at least like 3 or 4 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're like a machine.
Yeah,
it was also
crazy.
It's great to see that it's like that That's a big legacy for all of us, is the impact of video game music.
The impact of that old Yamaha keyboard. So now we've all done a lot of video game music on that. Now we're going to move on to a track from Dear Mario by Will. This is the ending track, the last track in the album. It's called Thank You, Mario. This is really cool.
I wanted to kind of bookend the album with the title track being Dear Mario and the final track being Thank You, Mario. I kind of think of it, you beat the game. But this is one that it was a really long process. I actually wrote an entirely different ending and credits theme that I ended up scrapping. It took a really long time, but I just decided it, I don't know, it didn't feel quite as authentic as I wanted it to. And then I was kind of down in the dumps. I was really bummed about it. And then finally, when this ending melody came to me, I felt very relieved and I sequenced it. And now I'm really happy with how it turned out.
All right. This is Thank You, Mario. Listening to Thank You, Mario by Will from Dear Mario. This consists of two musical ideas. You have the initial ending theme, which is very influenced by the Mario World ending, or I guess the Mario 3 version, where it's kind of extended. And then it goes into the credits theme, which is a fun Latin piece, which, again, very heavily inspired by Mario 3. I remember Will showed me the first version of this, completely different theme that I thought was good, but he just wasn't completely satisfied with it. He completely scrapped it and
It was more ambitious. It was much longer. It had all these different ideas.
Wasn't as simple.
It was really hard to throw away, but I was going back to the old ending, and I'm just like, how does he convey so much with so few gestures? So I just kind of... It was
so
a good
concise.
Experience kind of just having to throw it away. And I actually ended up using the main melody for the credits theme from the old version. I ended up doing in a short little like 15-second intro. So the opening track of the album, Dear Mario, does retain that credits melody.
Cool. I didn't know that.
That melody I was really proud of, but I
and
just
it really kinda... found its right home because it's just such an outstanding opening to the album.
Yeah, guys, check out Dear Mario. It's absolutely
Yeah, it's funny. We're playing all this Child of the Chozo stuff that I'm really proud of. It feels like an achievement, but to me, like this, that ending melody is still kind of like the highlight of my composing. It just makes me feel very satisfied.
So cool. So now we're going to move on to a track of mine. This was a Genesis VOPM track that I made a couple years ago called Stroll in the City. It's funky, it's groovy, it's kind of very natural music for me to compose. It's something that I do just for my own enjoyment. I don't have to think a lot about it. It's just something that I really like to do.
Yeah, so Marty and I were listening to this on YouTube the other day.
Oh, cool, man. This
we were
is
going through some of your old stuff.
Stroll in the City. A lot of fun for me to make. I remember working on this one. This is Stroll in the City. This is just a VOPM track that I made a couple years ago.
Man, when you just nail that Sega swing feel, it's so cool. Because we all sort of know that a lot of times it's like when you start to swing like really hard, kind of in the real world, for lack of a better term, you know, sometimes it can almost get to this place where it's maybe not that cool,
yeah.
If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And it's like, but we have just such a great experience with the great sonic swings, mm-hmm. and it's just awesome, and it's so cool, and
well,
it's so
cool
fun.
It's like, it's thanks, almost man. All like triplet based.
Yes.
A lot of those video game swings. The notable exception being the Super Mario Overworld theme, where
yeah.
it's like any element of swing is done with some sort of like delay. It's a really weird.
It's really sort of cloudy. Yeah.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, no, fun. Well, now we're going to move on. We're really excited, guys, because after this track, we're going to be unveiling something really exciting. So before we do that, let's play the last track Will wants to share today from Child of the Chozo. This is the final track, the title track.
Yeah, so for this, I was very inspired by, there's that orchestral medley of Super Metroid music that I'm kind of a huge fan of. So that was kind of my main inspiration, and I took the title theme of Child of the Chozo mm-hmm. and the opening kind of overworld theme. I think it's called Adventure in the Cavern Below. And I did like a John Williams-esque kind of orchestration.
This is really cool. This is Child of the Chozo by Will Brueggemann. Awesome, man, that's so cool. And this is a great kind of segue, guys. There's really not a lot you need to say about that track. So now we're going to move on. We're going to unveil two tracks from our current project that all three of us are working on. If you guys remember, we announced a couple times before, we're working on a double album. This is a tribute to Mario World 1 for the SNES and also Yoshi's Island. It's going to be a double album that will be released sometime later this year, and we're having such a great time with it, and we're really excited to unveil two tracks from this album we're calling Hello World. So we're first going to start off with a track for what would be from the first disc of this album, which is influenced by Super Mario World, composed by Koji Kondo. So let's play. This would be the first map theme on the album, or the imaginary game. This one was composed by Marty from Hello World. So cool. This is the first map theme from our first disc of our double album, which is inspired by Super Mario World. Once again, this double album will be called Hello World.
Yeah, I'm so excited about this project. We're just going to do a little tease for you guys today. We don't want to play any of the big themes, but we're actually coming along quite well on the progress of the album. I imagine by the next time we do an original showcase, the album will be released. So I'm really excited about this. Marty, I think you did a wonderful job. This map theme is one of my favorites so far on the album, actually.
Thanks so much.
The melody is so delicate, and it's very simple. It's honestly it feels more emotional and more rich than the like the Donut Plains map theme.
Wow, that's
I think it's very beautiful.
Oh, thanks. So, you know, a lot of what we're trying to do with this project is almost show a different side to the Mario world than you were able to kind of witness in the original game. So we're kind of staying true to the spirit and the language of that music, but trying to show a different side that wasn't there in the original game.
Absolutely. So that was a taste of our first volume inspired by Mario World. Now we're going to show you a taste of our second volume inspired by Yoshi's Island. This is, again, the first map theme. This time, Will composed this one. Let's take a listen to this. Listening to the first map theme from our second volume of Hello World. If you guys noticed, this second volume uses samples from Yoshi's Island, and the first volume uses samples from Mario World. So we're having such a good time with this album. It's really coming along nicely, and we absolutely can't wait to share this with the world.
And Will, this is really such a perfect melody here.
Thanks, man.
Just so proud to be part of a project that's already producing such great
music. This is the first project, Super Mercado Brothers tribute album, that really feels like it's kind of this tripod where Marty's involvement is, you know, really about like 33%.
I'd say like the most significant, potentially. Marty's composing the highest number of tracks. I'm also doing quite a few tracks, and Carl is sort of the lead on the technical. And I think because we were so impressed with all of his work with the Kirby album, how clean the samples, that Yoshi's Map theme, I sequenced and did that one myself, but the reason why it sounds so clean as polished is thanks to all of his hard work ripping. You know, it was kind of funny when we played your Kirby thing, I felt kind of embarrassed of my Child of the Chozo stuff because it just, the samples weren't recorded and made at such a high
fidelity.
Yeah,
no, but ripping this, all the samples for both these games for this project was a time-consuming but really rewarding process, and being able to finally use all those samples with our own new music, it's so fun, guys. So we're really having a good time. Hopefully you enjoyed that little taste, and we're excited to share more in the future.
This is probably going to be our big blowout. This is probably going to be the last tribute album Mercado Brothers thing.
Right.
After this, I feel like we're just going to be
focusing on games,
new music for games and stuff. So this is kind of a big blowout, and what better than these two phenomenal 16-bit soundtracks.
Well, guys, we had such a great time today for Original Showcase 6. Stick around next week. You know, in the coming weeks, we're going to be closing out the season. We have some really cool stuff in store. Thanks so much. If you're new to the podcast, thanks for joining us. Once again, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook.
Yeah, Marty, what kind of projects are you doing currently? Anything you want to plug? Anything that you want to talk about that you're working on as of late?
Yeah, in addition to plugging Fireflower, we're so excited that we finally are sharing that online. I'm actually working on some music for a short film.
Yeah, that's sort of a follow-up to a collaboration you did with this director previously. In that short film, The Cucarantula, made it to the Cannes Film Festival. Isn't that correct?
That's right, yeah. In the short film section of the Cannes Film Festival.
Well, congrats, man. That's a huge honor.
Exciting. Oh, thanks, yeah. No, I was so thrilled to have
that
music played
there. And so this is kind of it fits. I've heard some of the music. You're doing sort of like a Muzak-y thing, which is kind of, it went hand in hand with that Marty's Corner you did about Tataka.
Right. Yeah. Maybe in the future, the next round, I'll
show
some of that music.
Yeah, you'll have to share that for sure. Yeah. No, it sounds like all three of us have some really good, rewarding projects that were really kind of fulfilling us musically. So great to share some of that with you guys. Once again, my name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann.
And I'm their brother, Marty Brueggemann.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. Have a great week.
Peace out.